This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else. Hello, and welcome to Marvel Noise. David A. Price is unavailable this week. I'm your host for this episode, Derek Coward. Marvel Noise can be found at marvelnoise.com and is part of the Comic Book Noise family. You can go to comicbooknoisefamily.com for more details as well as links to all the shows in the Comic Book Noise family. Marvel Noise is also part of the Deliberate Noise Network. You can get more details by going to deliberatenoise.com. Did I already say my name is Derek Howard and I'll be your host for this episode? I think I did. I think I might. I'm not sure. Anyway, this is going to be a really relatively simple episode of Marvel Noise. We have a segment from Steve Raker. Well, he'll be talking about Bob Layton's Hercules. And then I will be back with a little bit of jibber jabber, and then we'll call it a night. So, hey, here we go. Here's Steve.
Hey, exiled cosmic spacefarers. Demigod Steve Raker and Alan here from the interstellar way station that is the comic book bunker. Thanks for coming back to join me for this Herculean effort that will surely reach the heights of Mount Olympus itself.
Harry.
And of course we know you, Alan, as the new mutant on the boards, and those boards that we like to hang out on are the forums on the 11oclockcomics.com forums.
I am he. I am the new mutant.
And thanks for not waiting all the way until episode 250 or whatever we said the next time that we got together.
Yeah, I'm starting to get my feet wet in all these podcasting forums, and I'm ready. I want to do stuff. I'm happy with it.
And what we've got here for you that I've been alluding to in episodes past is a look at Bob Layton's Hercules Prince of Power material that is handily collected in two nice standard size hardcovers that have been released over the last few years. One is the Hercules Prince of Power that reprinted the first two limited series that were in 1982 and 1984, each four issues. And then the second hardcover is Hercules Full Circle, also by Bob Layton, and that reprints the Marvel graphic novel entitled Full Circle from the late 80s, as well as a couple other little things from the back of a Marvel Tales backup, and also a Marvel Comics Presents serial that dipped back into this world that Layton created. And then last year, in 2010, Layton came back to this mythology he had created, 20, 30 years ago now.
And ouch.
I know it, man. And gave us Hercules, Prince of Power, Twilight of a God, four issues that he wrote and inked and had capable penciler Ron Lim draw, which was also four issues reminiscent of his structure for the first two. Pretty cool. And these take place, although they're the Hercules we know and love from the Marvel 616, they take place in the far-off distant future, which is cool. It let Layton really have his run of things. And this stuff almost feels like a Jim Starlin book because it's such a Marvel cosmic type of adventure. You know what I mean, Alan?
Definitely. That's where it may have been in the early 80s where space was some kind of attraction. I wonder why.
Yeah.
In the early 80s, why space would have been a lure for readers and writers alike.
And the cover of the first issue, and which also was the ad for this, was one of Marvel's first limited series back in 1982. Show Hercules with a bunch of starships behind him. So this is outer space Hercules, and turns out what a neat idea. And the basic premise is that Hercules returns to Olympus again sometime in the future. And he ticks off Zeus and gets exiled to the stars. He gets Apollo's chariot and two war horses that pull it to take him on his interstellar exile. And off he goes to potentially learn some lessons in humility.
And if it's the consistency of Zeus that I didn't notice before until I reread this. And as long as I keep in mind, Zeus is a big guy with red hair. And that, you've noticed, is consistent in all the other times that you see Zeus with the current series that when he replaced the Hulk title.
Yep.
And all the Olympians and people and Amadeus Cho and company. Zeus was always a big red-headed dude. And then when he was retconned on purpose, he was a redheaded kid. So redhead, that's Zeus.
There's your consistent characterization.
I need it. I need it.
At least it's visually consistent, right?
I gotta have it.
So Hercules, first out in outer space, meets up with a bunch of Rigelian colonizers. Those little kind of dwarfy alien Rigelians. Who have been well established in the Marvel Universe. And Hercules ends up taking on one of their recorder beings that are, robot collectors of data that are humanoid shape. And we know the recorder back from a bunch of good Thor cosmic stories from back in the day, so to speak.
Hercules always seems to need his extra time, his equal time when it comes to what Thor does.
Yeah, and Herc likes to pontificate too. He needs someone to be able to say, "Ho, come this way, friend recorder," and sit down and have a flagon of mead, etc.
Now, this is what I like about Hercules. This is why I wanted to work with you in this segment about Hercules, because Hercules is the guy. I mean, look, we are. Let me just be humble a little bit. We're the little guys, right? We're the guys who like to be at home and read our comics and just... We know that there are sports in the world. We know that there are physical people out there somewhere. But we're the bookworms. So Hercules is that guy that we know on the campus, but we don't really know. We can see him across the campus and we know he gets all the chicks. He's the big man on campus. He's the football guy. And he's probably not as big of a jerk as he appears to be. Hercules is that guy. And this every time they cover Hercules lately, they're showing us the better part of that guy. The guy with the big smile. He knows what he is. He knows he's got power. And he's not ashamed of any of that. He's kind of happy about that, celebrating his strength. But he's also got this great personality, where when he's got the recorder with him, he's always got his arm around the recorder, he's right. Hugging on him, and he's being friendly, like you said, come and have a flagon of mead. He's not just I'm a demigod, you're lucky to be in my presence, although he does feel like you're lucky to be given the
he
gift.
He does feel that way, right.
You're lucky to be given the gift whenever you come across him in conflict.
Indeed.
But he comes across with such a good spirit about it. He's just a big, like, I'm when you look through Leighton's drawings of him, you always see Hercules with this big smile.
True.
Just this great personality. That's what I like the most about him.
And adventure comes to him. He's that kind of a guy where it's just being around him, adventure will come to you too.
Yeah.
So he's got this great persona, like you said, and Leighton certainly develops it well here. And I should also say that there is a running tongue-in-cheek atmosphere or flavor to the series as well that I think is really skillfully not overdone, but it is a light-hearted series of adventures, even though there's some serious stuff going on at times.
Yeah. Like, let me just read this one little piece here. So, in the first issue, he comes across this huge blue alien, bigger than he is, right? And as soon as he lays eyes on him, he goes, "Strongest creature in the galaxy? What joy leaps into my noble heart? At long last, I found one sturdy enough to receive the gift!" And then he lays into this blue guy, punching him for no other reason, just that he gets a chance to beat somebody up using his gifts. And as soon as he hits him, the big blue guy sits on his butt and starts to cry. And he says, "What did I do to make you hate me?" And he's crying. And then you see Hercules, he's like, "Oh, I did not know. I sought only amusement."
It's true. He and he's an honest guy too. You know, he'll take responsibility for something that went wrong and feel terrible for about it and try to make right. And it turns out that these giant strongest creatures in the galaxy also happen to be the gentlest. So immediately the crowd turns against him too. Like everybody knows Big Larry's, you know, a big okay guy. What are you doing picking on him? You know. And fortunately, he's quite literally saved by the bell because a big tragedy happens outside where a Star Cruiser crashes into the port, and I think the engine is potentially going to go nuclear or something like that. So with the engine ruptured, Hercules runs out there and saves the day and basically makes amends, at least in his mind.
Yes.
And that's where the issue ends.
Yeah, that's where you're going into character development. That, I think, is what Leighton wanted to convey through the series of his first story, is that Hercules is a big dunderhead. He's in search of battle. He loves his strength. He's got a great personality, but he has room to grow.
Indeed. The second issue, Hercules, again, he's also presented as sort of the naive guy out there in the vastness of space where everybody is a little bit sharper and has been there before, you know, and he's really in uncharted territory, hence the misunderstanding with the big giant, et cetera. So Hercules ends up losing his chariot in a rigged race. in a bet, and he ends up having to come up with money to repossess them. So he seeks a reward for rescuing a kidnapped girl named Lana Sweetwater, and she's in a fortress full of pirates, and he's able to rescue her, breaks right in and does what's supposed to be done. This is Hercules. He's capable of these great feats, right?
Of course.
But nobody really expected anybody to be able to rescue this girl, so there's no reward for him. And he decides he's going to hang on to her until he gets what's his, which is okay by her, because she's pretty enraptured by him.
Yes. Well, aren't we all?
Yeah. They end up in bed together. And some of these pages, I got to say, too, look suspiciously like Vinnie Coletta lips on the girl.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
In the signature Coletta lips. I'm going to actually ask Leighton about this at New York Comic Con if he's there. What's up with that? Because he's a real friendly guy to talk to if you get a chance. A real nice guy. And actually spilled the plot to the final Hercules limited series to me last time or the time before that when I met him. Nice guy. Anyway, and Hercules and the recorder, I got to earn my press pass, right? So Herc and the recorder are also racking up quite a bill on the Regellian charge account that the recorder has access to. They've got new clothes, the recorder needs repairs, food, lodging, etc. And that's going to come back to bite them as well. And so in the end, Hercules meets Lana Sweetwater's reptilian fiancé, who she said was, after her and all this sort of business. But it wasn't that way at all. She kind of ended up being on the run, and he's a pretty reasonable fellow, and ends up actually paying Hercules his reward. So he gets his money in the end, and Lana's shown to be a liar. And
shame on her.
Hercules, in the very end, also gets his steeds back because their new owners got laid up in the hospital by them because these horses.
Oh, did you hear that? Did you hear that thunder?
I certainly did. Wow.
Yeah. The gods are angry.
Is this going to be a thing like in Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein, wherever you say Frau Blücher and the horses go? That whenever we mention these horses, we're going to get thunder.
Zeus is looking over our shoulders. He wants to make sure that we treat his son right.
And this is a running gag in every issue, in every port, in every planet or interstellar way station they go to, that whoever are like the port workers, someone loses an arm or gets eaten or something by Hercules' horses.
Yeah, because they're actually Apollo's horses, right? They're Apollo's steeds, and they're flamed manes and fire blowing out of their noses, and nobody can tame them. And anybody who tries gets something bitten off.
In issue number 3, Hercules arrives in the Omicron system. And here he and the recorder meet a fella named Commander Malin, who keeps calling Hercules the magician, which is kind of endearing. And this guy's a pretty much a blue-collar security force commander. And he tells Hercules that there's planets in the system that are disappearing at kind of predictable intervals, too. And they all end up witnessing the latest planetary abduction and intercept. So Hercules, of course, joins in the fray and wants to see if he can be of help, being the altruistic guy he is. And he boards the giant enemy vessel and ends up being captured by these beings who say that what they're doing by stealing these planets is a religious sacrament, a sacrifice that they make to their god.
Now, who, dear listeners, do you think, what kind of god do you think would accept an entire planet as a sacrifice? Stay tuned.
Hercules breaks free, of course. He wrecks their machine and escapes. And with their sacrifice or their attempt to get their sacrifice to appease their god ruined, this entire race of planet-stealing aliens commits like a grand mass suicide.
Yep, they decided since we can't fulfill our gift to our god, we are no longer worthy, so through their last act, they hope to be cleansed, and they blow themselves up, and their giant planets, their giant ships are big as planets, so you see two big fire blasts on either side of this planet, and you've got that shading kind of going on. I love the sensibilities of artists when it comes to, what would this look like? Let's just do this. A suggestion, a hint of it. Back in the 80s, they had, their basic color separation, so they didn't have all the nuances of computer-separated colors. So they did their best, and it's effective. It works.
And, back in the 80s, it took two ships to steal a planet.
Well, they were limited, They were only followers.
And in the end of issue number 3, we learn that these aliens' planetary sacrifices were for none other than Galactus. And he's pretty miffed that there's no table setting for him at his prearranged mealtime. So issue number 4 begins, and issue number 4 has a great cover of Galactus blasting away at our pal Hercules. Which is the issue that I chose to have Bob sign when I met him, whenever the heck it was there. And it's one of my favorite issues, being a big Galactus fan of all time, and you'll soon see why.
You are the devourer of words.
The planet that Hercules saved by interrupting these planet-snatching aliens happened to be called Seagram 7. Not spelt the way you think, but it means what you think.
Exactly right.
And this is the Distiller's Planet, and they're well known for their exotic potions and brews.
No doubt.
So even though Herc's horses eat two of their dock workers,
and that's harsh, isn't that a little? Isn't that a little harsh? Ate them, completely ate them. I mean, you don't see it graphically, but the idea is like, wow.
Yeah. So even though he doesn't make friends at the spaceport, there he does get to live up his notoriety and their gratitude on Seagram 7 for a while. He's even given a flask of what they call their most potent concentrated liquor that's in the known universe. It's a rare and priceless substance, and having just a vial of it that they give him is enough to last a man a lifetime. Because all you need is a drop, you know, each time, if that, a drop of a drop.
And he is warned, remember, no more than a drop diluted in water or it'll fry your scrogies off.
And so things are going well there on old Seagram 7 until Frankie Ray Nova, Herald of Galactus at the time, she shows up and starts, you know, softening the planet up for her master, as Galactus's heralds tend to do. And Hercules claims himself to be the protector of the planet, so she and Herc duke it out. Then he mentions that he's from Earth, and they get it on.
You know, and so this is what I mean about Hercules, right? He's a big kind of oaf, but he's got charm, and he knows it. And it seems like Bob Layton wants us to know that everyone else knows it too. So even when he's with an enemy, if she finds him slightly attractive, he's willing, and they wind up going at it.
And I like how it shows that the Frankie Ray Nova is still that girl with big stars in her eyes. You know what I mean? From that she's still enamored by. Oh, you're Hercules from Earth, and she still has that moment of celebrity awe, so to speak, even though she's been now for however many years this is in the future. She's been flying around in outer space, serving up planets to Galactus. So she's quite an experienced girl herself.
Yeah. Now, back when this was written, of course, in the 80s, there's no reason to believe that Frankie wouldn't be still doing what she does in the future. But
She had just become Galactus's herald in Byrne's FF.
So this is what I want to believe. I want to believe that Frankie Ray, back then, along with her cosmic powers, had the power to go through time into the future. Because this Frankie Ray that we have in this series is not the Frankie Ray that is in Marvel continuity today.
Well, this is an alternate future timeline.
I want it to be real.
So Herc ends up meeting up with Galactus, immortal to immortal. Galactus gives him some modicum of respect. But Hercules strikes him with a Havoc Thee, gives him a left hook. And Galactus shows him who's who by incinerating him, turning him into a little protoplasm, and then remaking him a few times, that kind of stuff. So Hercules realizes, all right, that I can't stop Galactus here, and instead tries to be civil and asks Galactus to join him for a drink. And Hercules spikes the drink with the Seagram 7 potion, all of it. So Galactus starts fuming, literally, right? The steam coming out from his helmet. He's like, is it getting hot in here? And pulling out his collar.
And but he takes off his helmet.
That is one of the coolest things I thought when I was a young lad, age 12, reading this. One nice thing about being born on a decade, as I was born in 1970, I can always very quickly figure out how old I was in a year by what year it was, you know? So this is 1982. I was 12. yeah, I thought that was so cool. We get to see Galactus under the mask and get to see what his face is like, and it's kind of cool.
And his hair, he's got a funky Kirby like hairline.
He does.
And you know those squares that you always see in his eye shape through the mask. Clearly, that seems to be his pupils. He has square pupils.
And with Herc having played his hand, he says, "Ha ha! You know, I've rendered you inebriated," or whatever he says. Galactus just laughs it off and calls Herc a buffoon. you know, and
quite the amusing buffoon.
Yeah, engages in a big old belly laugh and gives Herc credit for, you know, causing him to do so, you know.
And he liked that.
So much so that he spares Seagram 7 for the good distraction that Herc provided.
And sent him back.
So he saved Seagram 7 twice now. And Planetside, unfortunately, not all as well as the series ends, because the Rigelians have shown back up, and they're pretty ticked off about the bill that Herc and the Recorder have racked up on their account. So they repossess the Recorder, who really doesn't want to go, showing the friendship that's developed between this hunk of steel bolts and a demigod. And the Seagram 7 folks actually step up and pony up for the bill. So that ends up being settled. But the Recorder still has to go through whatever bureaucratic channels and get emptied so they can get the data and stuff off of them. And the whole series ends with Frankie Ray showing back up and Herc and her about to go another 10 rounds.
Go, buddy boy.
So 2 years later, in 1984, now the limited series format, the four-issue limited series, has been pretty well established. We've had quite a few by now, and it was time for a sequel of one of the first and best. So Leighton came back with another Hercules Prince of Power limited series. And this time we're shot again into the future, some 41 years since Hercules first adventured into the Omicron system, which was in issue 3 of the first series. And Hercules is single-handedly putting down a rebel uprising. And you once again see that the Recorder is with him. And the Recorder reveals that a scan of the rebel leader's vitals confirms that he's a shape-shifting Skrull.
Yes.
Then Herc and the Recorder are called to the side of Herc's still friend after all these decades later, Commander Malin, who has been critically injured on the battlefield. And he's still calling Herc Magician to his dying breath, and even asks him to grow some gray hair sometime before he ends up dying in Hercules' arms.
And that's the conundrum of being Hercules or any god, that when you're among mortals, you watch them get old and you watch them die.
Right. That's used to great effect for him to reflect on the passage of time, how he came to Omicron, befriended Malin, saved the system from Galactus, etc. Lets you all catch up and bring you right up to this point, which is cool. And Hercules, since the last series, you grew bored after a while, enjoying Seagram 7's pleasures again, being a hero to their planet, and he reacquired the Recorder and joined Malin's Star Cavalry and enjoyed, as they describe, many violent triumphs over the decades that followed. So now with Malin gone, they decide their tour of duty there is done, and Herc and the Recorder leave and head to the nearby Orion Galaxy. And Herc's steeds, of course, injure another spaceport worker. But there's this nice, pretty blonde empath who's able to go right up to them and kind of calm them down and interact with them okay.
And there's no flames. They don't. They go totally horsey when she's around.
Hercules then sees this beautiful, statuesque redhead, and he's enamored immediately, but she flips him and everybody else off. And he encounters her a few times, but she continues to make these quick escapes. She's, you know, unreachable, this lady. And Hercules even blows off some advances from that nice spaceport blonde empath lady to instead choose to chase after this unattainable redhead. And meanwhile, on old Olympus's towering tops, French and German viewed some hops, if you ever took gross anatomy, that's the old anagram that lets you remember the cranial nerves. Zeus's punishing Ares. There's also a dirty one that lets you remember the cranial nerves too. On old Olympus's towering tops is the well accepted one. But on Olympus, Zeus is punishing Ares, calling him out. Ares is calling out Zeus, saying, "We've gotten lazy here as gods," and Zeus won't hear of it and immediately vaporizes Ares into this steamy pile of dung. Something weird is going on in Olympus.
Most weird. Now Ares always has been kind of weird for me.
Yep.
So when you say that this is an alternate future, I could accept Ares' difference. But when we realize that this is supposed to be the same Ares in our series of going through, I suppose, Civil War and the rain, Dark Reign, when that Ares is this Ares, although this Ares is a redhead like his dad.
Yeah, well, remember Ares in at that time in the Marvel Universe was really an occasional Thor villain, if you will, or when Hercules and Thor teamed up to battle him and Hades or whatever. Ares hadn't been that well established at that time. And again, this is not only the future from our current time that the first series was, but then it's another 40 years after that. So all of these characters certainly have room to be acting somewhat differently, because we're now 100 years into the future at least, right?
Yes. Yep.
Anyway, that's my excuse.
You get a no prize.
So Hercules and the Recorder spot the redhead again, and they end up crashing her well-attended fashion show. But the Recorder uses that niftily pre-established vitals scanning ability and determines that this redhead is a Skrull. Turns out to be an old, scruffy Skrull at that.
And an old, scruffy male Skrull.
Oy. And the crowd, as soon as they learn that, pretty much turn violent. And the Skrull, whose name is Skippy, of all things, the Skrull has a pretty pathetic little story of escaping persecution from his people and trying to just blend in. And this happens to strike a chord with Herc. And he engineers an escape for all three of them, himself and Skippy and the Recorder. And that all ends at the spaceport with a nice kiss between Herc and that blonde empath after all, as she helps cover their very hasty escape.
Yes. And what's the last frame? The last panel is that Zeus is looking down on this, and he declares, "My rule shall soon come to an end, but before that time comes to pass, the gods of Olympus shall die."
Uh-oh. And he's just the guy to do it. Now, in issue number...
problem.
Two, during their escape from this spaceport, Herc has an impulsive move to let go of the reins of the of his steeds, of Apollo's chariot, and leap from the chariot onto a pursuing vessel. And the chariot ends up crashing through a wall, and the Recorder's gyros get all damaged up. And it all ends up leading Hercules to agree to try to contain himself in the future and seek resolution through reason above all else, right?
Yes, and Skippy is now an official part of his entourage. So Skippy takes that tumble along with Recorder.
And again, feeling like it's a very Starlin-like, almost like a love letter to Starlin's work, Skippy plays the role of Pip the Troll, in the dialogue and as far as the dynamics between them character-wise. At least that's how I felt it was. It could have easily been Pip the Troll.
You're right. I see that.
Now, this thing of seeking resolution through reason above all else doesn't work so well when they're then surrounded by the local constables And he chooses to surrender rather than fight his way out. He chooses that he thinks he's going to eventually reason his way out, and that doesn't fill Skippy or the recorder with too much confidence. Now, like you said, on Olympus, Zeus is... at this point, he's basically living out the end of The Doors, the end, right? He's going room to room, you know? He's going down the hallway into everyone's room, and he's killing his brethren gods. Only the sun god Apollo escapes in a streak of light, in his namesake, basically.
Because he's fast, you see. He's out of there.
Now, also interesting in this issue is Marvel's Western hero from the 60s, the Red Wolf, is reinvented into a futuristic, cosmic, Skrull-killing, soul-possessing entity whose alter ego is imprisoned with Herc. And Hercules ends up encountering him there in the cell. And after Hercules meets Skippy's trying to help Hercules escape, and you know, that doesn't go well.
No. Now, there are two details I want to add in here.
Yep.
One of the details is after Zeus started killing the gods of Olympus, Hercules woke up with prominent gray streaks in his hair.
Yeah.
So Hercules started to understand that maybe his immortality is waning away, but he doesn't know exactly why. He just sees that that's what's going on with him. So that's kind of a consequence of what Zeus is doing on Olympus.
And it also shows that Commander Malin's dying sarcastic remark was also foreshadowing this when he said to Hercules, why don't you grow some gray sometime?
Right. And the second thing is Skippy's a Skrull, and we know the first time we saw him, he was masquerading as a beauty queen. In this issue, he has a choice to go undercover when he's with Hercules and Recorder going marching through some in the space station, and he turns into a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And Recorder says, speculation, he could have turned into a little boy, you know.
Right.
And we will find that pattern continue as we follow Skippy and his friends. We will find that Skippy seems to choose turn into females rather than males.
He does, and I'm sure that those choices are continually reinforced, because I'm sure that life is a lot easier and that people end up being a little more distracted and therefore maybe not so much interrogating him when he's traveling throughout the star system if he's a beautiful girl rather than you know, some dude. But he certainly seems to end up, you certainly end up with the image of a scruffy old Skrull dressed in women's clothing several times throughout the series.
Yeah.
In the end, like I said, after Hercules and this Red Wolf guy swap stories, Skippy tries to free Hercules, and as a Skrull, this immediately springs this Red Wolf character to life, and he and Hercules end up battling, and in the end, Hercules saves Red Wolf's life, and then Red Wolf agrees to let Skippy live. Yay. So issue number 3 opens with a group of inept tomb robbers. They all end up meeting their end tomb trap-wise as they try to reach none other than Captain Mar-Vell's crypt. Again, giving it that Starlin flavor to this series, I'm telling you.
No doubt.
They are trying to raid Mar-Vell's crypt for the Negabands to give to their leader, Shrek, of all people.
Shrek.
And Shrek happens to be the last survivor of then Thanos' followers. At this time, both Thanos and Captain Mar-Vell were both dead. And Starlin wasn't working at Marvel.
So they could be dead.
Yeah, they stayed dead for quite some time. And actually, that's the, as I've mentioned before, that's the event that brought me back into comics in undergrad college, is when Starlin came back to Marvel and took over writing the Silver Surfer and brought back Thanos, which led into all the Infinity stuff. But anyway, here...
It's notable to mention that Shrek doesn't look anything like Shrek. We might think when we play Shrek. He's a big humanoid with regular old pink skin and space tights.
This is about a decade and a half before we'd know any other type of Shrek. Except for maybe Bob Shrek, editor over at the Distinguished Competition.
I wonder if Bob Shrek has a full beard and a mustache.
I believe he does, actually. I believe he does.
Oh, we know what's going on.
Intercompany crossover. So Hercules had, you know, some visions of Zeus, like you said, going nuts. So they're basically heading back to Olympus, but they get detoured as they get closer to our solar system by Mentor of Titan. Again, giving it that Starlin flavor as he, as we encounter the Titans. And
Star Fox?
Yeah, exactly. Mentor and Star Fox have recovered a dying, aged Apollo, who, before he dies, gets to warn Hercules that he's now the last of the children of Olympus, and to beware the High Father. So Mentor, being the pal that he is, he uses Isaac, who is the planet's planetary core computer, supercomputer, to scan Mount Olympus and do confirm that its current state is what Apollo says. But the power that is consumed to run this scan shuts down some essential programs like tomb security. And it's just perfect timing because that Shrek guy was about to meet his end, and he is now amazingly enabled to recover Mar-Vell's negabands, which he's equipped to handle and siphon and wield, and he then attacks Titan with his power.
With the trademarked sparkly flying trail behind him, like Mar-Vell always had.
Yep.
And he comes swooping in for the attack.
So Hercules and Mentor and Eros, Star Fox, and Skippy all hold this Mar-Vell-powered Shrek until the recorder and Isaac near literally put their heads together, and they steer the gang towards the idea of overloading this guy, and... kapoof, he burns out like a used-up battery.
Notable, again, Skippy, when he decided to change his shape into a woman, and Eros slash Star Fox was hitting on him during... I think there's something going, some subtext going on there.
He's like, where did that girl go? And where did this scroll come from? And it takes him a while to put it together.
Yep.
When he does, there's like there's a panel that really suggests like a Benny Hill chase kind of happening. There's like a little smoke, that dust that's like poofing up behind Skippy, and Star Fox is like lunging, chasing after him.
I'll kill him.
Come back here, Alvin. Issue number 4 begins with the neat storytelling device of showing us the recorder standing over a near-dead Hercules, and then proceeds to tell us sort of how they got to that sorry point.
They're standing amidst the ruins of Olympus.
Exactly. And... Hercules and the gang land on Olympus, and the trio encounter Zeus on his throne. But he's not just on his throne. He's on his throne wielding a sharp and really bloody battle axe. Not good. And he's all helter-skelter. He sends a hooved statue-like being that looks like an animated chess piece after the recorder and Skippy. And then he starts taunting Hercules with his immortality. He hovers it over an open flame in a little marble. But Herc won't...
It's a pearl. It's a pearl, you see.
Yeah, yeah,
the name of the story is A Pearl of Great Price.
Of course.
Oh, yes.
My negligence at play, for sure. But so he's trying to taunt Hercules. Come on, fight, you know. Time for you to die, too. And Hercules just won't do it. He refuses to fight back. He refuses to fight back for six pages while Zeus is, like, pummeling him. But he finally gives it to Zeus with a have it thee, like we were all hoping, after Zeus appears to snap Skippy's neck. So that was, you know, now you've, you know, you can mess with me, but you can't mess with my friends, you know?
And that was, I think that was another extension of the character growth that Hercules was supposed to be experiencing, whereas I usually like to fight, give you the gift, but I'm now thinking more, and I'm trying to reason things, and I'm not going to fight you, Father. I'm going to talk. We're going to reason this out. But no, you've hurt my Skippy, and now we're on.
And now that it's on, he lays Zeus out but good. But shows compassion before laying the death blow, and then Zeus immediately gets all fatherly again and says, Herc, pass the test and all that, you know, that they're basically having their Olympus Ragnarok. It's time for his generation of gods to be over, and Hercules is to be the sole survivor and to reseed the next generation of Olympian gods.
Reseed. Really reseed. Reseed them. You know what that means? Reseed them. Seed. You know what that means?
It means Hercules got to go find Nova again. So that's how it ends in 1984, and that's how the series actually, as far as I had up until maybe last month or the month before, when the limited series, the third limited series came out last year, I picked them up. I love Leighton's Hercules, thought these would be great, but because they were an alternate timeline future story, I just sort of set them not with, like, the current continuity stuff. And almost a year went by before I said, you know what, I got to delve into those. And I did, and they were so good that I went back and reread the old ones and realized, hey, wait a minute. Leighton, when I was out of comics in the late 80s, did a Marvel graphic novel of Herc. And fortunate enough that Marvel has, like I said, reprinted that in a Full Circle limited series. So I was able to grab that and really get more than I thought I was going to be able to as I revisited these fond stories. And
true believers, you were not abandoned.
So the Full Circle hardcover has a five-page story by Leighton that was supposed to appear as a backup in the solo Avengers title, but ended up being a backup in Marvel Tales, issue number 197. And this five-pager depicts Skippy collecting bets involving something that he's going to cause Herc to do. And Skippy's disguised as this robust middle-aged woman. And this is all a means of them making money. And, of course, it involves a big brawl. Then the Full Circle graphic novel kicks off. And here we have a red-headed, kind of a punk dictator emperor of the Andromeda Galaxy as he gets introduced. And he's gathering intelligence on Hercules and orders Hercules' arrest.
And, yes, he does. When he does that, we find Hercules having a good time arm wrestling a couple of people at the same time. And who's underneath the table but Skippy? And what form is Skippy in?
It's not a big hulking male.
See?
It's another little girl, so right?
Yes. Blonde with, yep, just a girl. Skippy likes to be a girl, people, I'm telling you.
Yeah, definitely.
He wants to be a girl.
and which is probably part of what caused him to be an outcast in the Skrull society, although it is left unsaid, you know, that he had to, he didn't fit in, and he, you know, left his culture. That could very well be the reason.
There you go, Steve Raker. That's why you are Steve Raker! You have found what I was going for all along. That's what I think. That is exactly what I think. But you got it, buddy boy. That's what I believe. I believe that Skippy is a transvestite Skrull.
And he also is never particularly enamored or attracted to any of the girls that they come across, and he's even snotty to a few. Because Hercules... Oh, go
he
ahead.
He is what he is. He is what he is.
As the guards arrive on this, you know, at this bar scene to arrest him for this punk dictator emperor, Hercules... gets sort of saved by the bell, where there's a big distraction of this huge Galactus appearing, and the planet starts to chaotically evacuate, right? Everything's going crazy. But Hercules uncovers a ruse of a scam of a farce of a ruse, and earns the guards' respect, even although they still have to arrest him. This whole Galactus thing ends up being a big fake.
Because when he punches Galactus, Galactus deflates and goes and just goes spiraling off into the sky.
And it's a pretty sneaky scam, you know, get everyone to go helter-skelter because Galactus is seen on the horizon, and then these guys, these pirates fly in and, you know, rob everybody blind.
Yeah, in a big, full Galactus ship that hovers over the planet.
So now arrested, Hercules is brought before Arimathes, the emperor, who imprisons him with where they have their other political prisoners imprisoned, and also confirms that Hercules is his father from 30 years ago in the first... from back in the first limited series. And this is another thing I want to ask Leighton about, although it might be fanboy nitpicking. But the beginning of the second limited series said it was 41 years from the first limited series. Yet this says, this basically claims that that this Arimathes is 30 years old and his birth was from the first limited series. So that messes the timeline up some. But anyway, maybe it's just me.
Also, don't leave out the fact that the people running the Galactus scam happens to be the two pilots that scammed him out of his chariot back in the first series.
Right.
It's the same two guys who were then later mauled by the chariot and were in traction when we last saw them.
And that's, you know, is indicative of two things about the series. One is that, again, the lighthearted tone of the series, that there are these sort of running gags, that it's like, oh, no, these guys get bested by Hercules again. And the other thing is that this is a rich little mythology that Leighton has set up here, and there are recurring elements that are now appearing almost a decade after the previous appearance. So things are really popping up, and having read them all in one big chunk in preparation and in celebration of having this discussion with you, these things were really apparent, and it was really fun to see all these common elements.
Yeah. Continuity, even if it's a separate continuity from the 616.
Right.
I just love continuity.
And speaking of continuity, who is this Arimathes, the Emperor's mother? It's that conniving Lyanna Sweetwater lady that Herc bedded, who ended up going off with the iguana guy.
Dun, dun, dun.
Unfortunately, she raised this Arimathes basically on her hate for Hercules. She told him lies about the circumstances of his birth and rode on the coattails of his rise to power. And her iguana husband guy, he's like blinded and reduced to a cell block servant.
You can tell she's evil now because she's got a buzz cut. Before she had pigtails, now she has a buzz cut, so she must be evil.
Now, Hercules engineers an escape with some newfound companions, plus his old pal Skippy and the recorder, of course, and learns that Arimathes and his people are in the process of invading Hercules' beloved neighboring Omicron system, where Commander Malin and all that stuff was, where Hercules resided for so long, where Seagram 7 is and all that business, and they're going to invade with their massive fleet. So this is this Arimathes guy is a conqueror and an imperialist.
So he's heavily influenced, don't you think? Isn't he heavily influenced by his advisor, who happens to also be his mother?
Yes, his mom is has the ear of the Emperor, and like we said, raised him on hate. And what's cool is Hercules manages to thwart the invasion. He saves his son from going down this evil path, and for being under Leanna's influence, he does so by challenging him for a duel for his crown, and sets it up to be very public. So Arimathes has to accept the outcome. And ends up beating Arimathes blindfolded.
And now, I didn't quite get why he did it blindfolded. Do you know why he decided he needed to be blindfolded?
Because he needed to humble Arimathes, who had likely never ever been humbled before in his life.
And so it was an overt just gesture to say, not only can I beat you, but I can beat you blindfolded.
Exactly.
Eat this crow. Okay.
And it was also to tick him off even more. You know, he's appealing to the ego that is Arimathes' weakness. So he can later say, listen, if you were in your right mind, you could have beat me. I was blindfolded, for crying out loud. But what does Hercules do after he wins the crown? He gives it right back to Arimathes, and thereby gives Arimathes not only Hercules' trust and a new position to advise him, but also gives him the much-needed lesson of humility, which Hercules is had a few of himself now out in outer space, and now he's dishing out the lessons.
And who hates that idea?
Well, this isn't good for Leanna Sweetwater, of course, but what's cool is that by doing this, Hercules plays out the role that his father once played for him. And all of this comes full circle.
Full circle! Nice.
And this collection ends with another little three-part tale that I didn't know existed that was a Marvel Comics Presents serial from issues 39 through 41 that was entitled Mother's Day, All in the Family. And this little quick romp has Hercules joining Arimathes on adventures and shows that Arimathes is becoming a wise and a just king. Even to his distractors, or his detractors, I should say. Mom, Leanna, is still exiled in the north wing of their castle estate. But she's secretly having these poker games with Skippy. And she uses him against his will. She drugs him, and he ends up impersonating the Emperor. And she uses him to allow her access back to the throne, and sits upon it, and is trying to again acquire power, and sends a hit squad out after Hercules and Arimathes.
And again, when he has his poker games with her, he wants to slip into something more comfortable, so he turns into a buxom woman. But because she wins, she had him to look like her son, and then that's when she drugged him and used him in the form of her son as a dupe for the throne, and had him tell everybody that she's out of jail, she's back on my staff, she's my advisor again, and that's how she got that bid for power back.
And to be clear, she sends her hit squad out after Hercules. She doesn't want Arimathes to be harmed, but he ends up becoming harmed because now that he's becoming ever heroic, he decides to protect those around him by doing the equivalent of jumping onto a live grenade. He gets all blowed up, right? He's all battered and bruised and, you know, 70% of his body is all burnt up. Yeah. But he survives, and he gives his mother a lesson. He shows his mother what her schemes have wrought, and it's much to her horror, and she sort of willingly returns to her exile and alludes at maybe, you know, never coming back.
Yeah, that's what we think.
So now we fast forward 20 years in our time, publishing-wise, to 2010, and we get the Hercules Twilight of a God series that, again, was 4 issues, and Ron Lim, Bob Layton art, which I really enjoyed seeing Lim stuff. It made me miss the Ron Lim cosmic work that he did for Silver Surfer and the Infinity Gauntlet stuff.
And I think Ron Lim was a good successor for the Bob Layton stuff because there's a similarity of line and line conservation. I like it.
And they both make things nice and shiny, right? I think Lim did the Iron Man Doctor Doom limited series from a couple of years ago that Bob Layton wrote and also inked.
Yeah, but I can't say that he's one of my top 10. I like and respect, but I do love what he's done with the Twilight of a God because there's something in here about his art that doesn't look like he usually. In some way, it seems like the shapes of some of his regular work is a little thinner.
Uh-huh.
I've noticed the heads are just a little thinner. Their faces maybe a little bit more thinner, and they have that sameness about him, but in this Twilight of a God, it has more of the Layton feel than the Ron Lim feel.
I agree.
If that's fair to say.
It is fair to say, although it also is 15 years since we've seen, you know, regular Ron Lim art, so I'm sure he's grown as a, you know, as an artist as well. So this Hercules series is another 40 plus years in the future of his chronology. And the series starts with Hercules saving Port Antares, which is like the capital port city of Arimathes' empire. He's saving Port Antares from a nuclear missile terrorist attack by defusing the nuke but riding the projectile itself with the bomb, you know, defused as it hits the city target. He rides it in, you know, I'm thinking of Slim Pickens in Dr. Strange's Love. But this was a little bit more of a Looney Tunes coyote moment where he's like, uh-oh, this is going to hurt, you know? And hurt it does. It gives him brain damage, sort of a fragile brain, multiple concussion kind of syndrome. Then...
For me, at that point, it seems just a little sad. What do you think? It's like, so he's got this traumatic brain injury now, and he's got 3 grandchildren from Arimathes, and they're watching after him. They're trying to make sure that he doesn't go overboard and do the outlandish things that he's been known to do since that accident.
Yeah, because you take a guy who was already headstrong, and now you remove some of his inhibition, and he's somewhat impulsive and oblivious to what's going on around him at times. He's caught, you know, peeing in a public plant, and,
yes!
You know, snoozing.
People, that's what's drawn here.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
and he's snoozing places that he shouldn't be snoozing and stuff like that. So, you know, things are changing for our hero. And within this first issue, we also jump another year forward since he crashed. So now he's sort of been in rehab, and this is his current state. He's on some medications that help him be more lucid, but he's getting old, and he's, you know, there's Grandpa doing, you know, some Grandpa thing again.
Yep, only Grandpa is this big, robust, muscular, young-looking Hercules, because he is still who he is, a demigod. And Arimathaeus, his hair is all gray now, and he's wrinkled, and he's lost his muscle tone. So the passage of time is going on for his son, but not for Hercules.
And like you said, he's got three grandkids, two sons, Ursus and Antonitis, and Juno, a daughter. And Arimathaeus, I think you're right about that. He, you know, is shown to be this benevolent emperor now. He set up a democracy with a civilian prime minister, but unfortunately it's a conspiring, evil Mr. Spin Corps, or Sphincter, as everyone calls him when they want to get on his nerves. And also kind of, again, saying that this is the twilight to this, the bookend to this whole mythology that Leighton has set up with Hercules, Prince of Power. We also have Skrull Skippy being terminally ill. And in the hospital, he happens to hear the Prime Minister guy, Mr. Spin Corps. He's plotting to change Hercules' neurological medication so that he'll humiliate himself and further solidify Spin Corps' hold on power and de-emphasize the aristocracy on the throne.
And good luck with that, Spin Corps.
Well, Skippy, because he overhears it, and I like the little comments that, again, are just so marvelly in my mind. Little things like Skippy says as he's laying in the hospital bed, "Well, what do you think these big ears are for?" Because he hears them all the way in the other room. And he foils the plot saves his buddy Herc. So they still got each other's back after all these years.
Yeah.
And now Galactus gets to be shown as still this reoccurring character in this mythos, too. On the outer rim of the Andromeda Galaxy, where Arimathaeus's empire lies, Galactus ends up being overwhelmed by consuming chemical components that he really doesn't recognize, and he gets a bad case of indigestion, and he is turning into a big black hole. And in doing so, he releases the Silver Surfer from his bond, and the Surfer immediately goes screaming towards Hercules and starts attacking the city around him. But then when you get to see the close-up, that's not the Silver Surfer we know.
Nope, he's from some other race.
Now,
he's not the Zenla Silver Surfer.
And that was the plot part that Leighton had spilled the beans to me early, was this whole idea of Galactus getting indigestion and turning into a black hole and expanding and all that business, which is kind of a cool concept, especially if you do it far in the future where anything can happen.
Right, Insider.
So issue number 2 starts, and this whole issue, it's just an all-out slugfest between Hercules, accompanied by his three adult grandkids, and this new Silver Surfer. And this Surfer, he's the last survivor of his race, and his race happens to be the planet-stealing aliens from the first series, issue 3, the ones that worshipped Galactus by giving him planets, and they all committed suicide, except for this guy who happened to be off the ship at that time. So he ended up hating Hercules for causing that to happen, and wished vengeance on him so bad, and it ended up leading him to Galactus, where he swore to become the new Silver Surfer, one that not only serves but also worships his master as a god. So that has to be a pretty good deal for Galactus,
right? And I saw that as the perfect herald. I never can understand everyone else heralding for Galactus when they know that they're leading planets to their death. Entire planets, and that they themselves wouldn't do it to a planet, but they would give these planets, like Frankie Raitt, for instance, being a woman from Earth, why would she willingly go out there and feed whole planets to Galactus?
Well,
I never understood that.
You said the two words, out there. That was the reason, from what I recall, that Frankie was even willing to turn on her relationship with the Torch, because she so wanted the opportunity to soar among the stars. She just thought that was the apple in front of her, or the carrot in front of her carriage, that she just could not pass up. I think that was her reasoning.
That part.
So much,
yeah,
so that willing to un. I think she even said something along the lines of, you know, who cares if a couple of ugly space creatures have to, you know, get eaten along the way by Galactus, but for the opportunity to soar among the stars. So she had literally stars in her eyes.
That's harsh, though. That's hard to accept.
That's why she it probably wouldn't have worked out between her and Johnny if she's that type, you know? She wasn't...
No kidding.
She had her moments as the Torch that weren't... that showed a little bit of... arrogance.
Yeah. No, Byrne did. He did see that character correctly, so that when she made that choice, it wasn't so unusual. But I just am so diametrically opposed to that idea that it's hard for me to accept that anybody would do that, even if they had, you know, those inklings of their character that they would. I mean, a planet. It's a big planet. You know what I mean? It's millions and billions of people, and you're just going to... Okay, Galactus is hungry. Too bad. Everybody, just get ready. You're going down.
He's beyond good and evil, Alan. He's a force of nature.
Whatever.
He is tasked to give back more than he has ever taken from the universe.
Oh, I see.
Which is cool.
And now I look up at...
Go ahead.
I look up at my screen and I see Galactus is representing Steven. So, you're a Galactus sympathizer.
In that, he's referencing the last Galactus story of Byrne's that Byrne never finished, but with the ending of that, where Galactus supposedly, like, in his own death and the death of this universe, releases all of the energy of all the planets and everything that he has absorbed over his existence and reseeds, like, the next universe. Pretty cool. But anyway.
Would you do it, Stephen Riker?
No,
would
I wouldn't.
Would you be a Galactus Herald?
No,
okay.
Only on the boards. Only on the forums. So in a traumatic moment during this battle with this new Silver Surfer, one of Hercules' grandkids, Ursus, jumps in the way of one of the Surfer's blasts and... he's incinerated, Alan.
Right in front of Hercules' eyes.
That drives Hercules into a rage, much like snapping Skippy's neck did when Zeus did it. And Hercules rises to the challenge. He becomes very lucid and beats the Surfer with his own board, decapitating him with it like Cap on Baron Blood style.
Right. Nice call.
Issue number 3 of this last series begins with the massive Galactus black hole shown to be growing. It's swallowing up surrounding systems. This could be the end of everything. And it's funny, too. There's this familiar Kryptonian scene shown, right, Alan, with a young Kal-El hurtling in a rocket away from his doomed planet, with his parents putting him on the rocket in that familiar way that we've seen before. And he's hurtling through the stars towards what they say is going to be his rendezvous with destiny. But
yes.
His
splat.
Yeah. Splatting against the hull of a traveling Rigelian vessel. Ouch.
Destiny is not without a sense of irony.
Not in the
late Bob Layton.
Not in the Layton verse, I guess, right?
Right.
And this is kind of focuses on Skippy the Skrull. He's trying to determine what permanent form he's going to take when he dies. He's on his deathbed. He says it's part of a ancient warrior Skrull death ritual where they take some type of serum that causes them to permanently freeze in a final form. it ended up being a way that they would hide their dead on the battlefield, but then ended up being spreading out and just becoming a cultural ritual overall. So he's trying to decide what he's going to live out eternity as, basically. And Arimathea's scientist, comes up with the idea to counteract the Fat Galactus effect, as they call it, with a white hole device that, to me, suggested an Alka-Seltzer. but the catch is it's got to be delivered to Galactus's unstable core, which is against all laws of physics as we know them. And issue number 4, the final issue of this world that Layton built, really is a fantastic coda for all of this mythology, I think. We get a closure to all the loose ends. Leanna Sweetwater is revealed as the big bad, and she's in league with that Spin Corps guy. It's a woman thing, don't you know?
Mm-hmm.
Only this time, Leanna Sweetwater, since the same amount of time has passed for her, she's grown to be quite soft and roundish, and her buzz cut went gray.
She's
she looks
doughy.
Like a sweet old grandmother.
Yeah, she's all doughy because she was in suspended animation for 40 years and cryogenic when she said that she was never going to come back when going off into her exile. She faked her own death and was put on ice. And unfortunately, when you're not exercising and just getting nutrients pumped into you, you end up a little fat and doughy. Hercules is now lucid in his final hours, which is interesting because that often is an occurrence heard of with people who have a lot of brain damage and even Alzheimer's patients where they can have some real moments of lucidity towards the end, which is odd but kind of charming in a way too. But Hercules is now the old Herc again. He's saying his goodbyes to Skippy, to the recorder, to his son and his remaining grandchildren, and he's off. He can deliver the device, the white hole device, because he still has Apollo's chariot. It bends the laws of physics, Alan.
That's right. And it can go where they don't have to worry about sacrificing other people or other vessels. They can't get close enough to the big indigestion that is Galactus. And while he's streaking through this weird world, this weird space, we see montages of Hercules' life. And we get to see some of the 616 continuity. Steve, so what's up? I see Ares here in his Ares getup with the skull and crossbones and the white plume helmet and looking the way he did in the dark rain.
Yep. Instead of having a mohawk, having a helmet that has a mohawk.
Yeah. And no red hair, like he did in the early Layton days, or at least when he was a major villain, but the Ares that we're more used to seeing these days.
And the whole thing of, like you said, there's been this running tone between Skippy and Hercules' conditions of this little bit of a sadness, but and I don't know if Layton lost someone in his family around this time, but it there's a joy to this issue, even though you know that Hercules is going off to his doom. It's really a celebration, and it's not a bad suggestion of a way to try to accommodate the loss of someone. Arimathaeus is saying, no, I'm old and withered, let me go. And Herc is like, no, I'm myself right now for however long we know. It's going to last, and I'm the one who needs to do this. If this is the way the son of Zeus is going to go out in glory, saving everyone, you guys will be singing praises about me for generations, etc. It's a real fond farewell, literally.
And it does speak to his ego. You know that's the way he would want to go out, having people sing his praises forevermore.
He also passes and says farewell to Uatu, the Watcher, in a nice sequence as he's going off. Like, hey, Watcher, how you doing? Here I go. You want to watch something? I'm not going to disappoint. I'm going to put on a great show for you, you know?
Yeah. Uatu's got a face like, come on.
So Hercules, he does it. He delivers and sets off the device, and nothing is left of that sector of space until days later, where the Watcher observes Galactus reconstitute himself from the resulting energies, and Galactus goes on. Like he says, he's going to be there till the end of this universe.
And as you rightly quoted, he's saying that no matter how many worlds he devours or civilizations he destroys, it is said that his destiny is to one day give back infinitely more than he has taken from it.
Truth. And Uatu and Galactus are then interrupted by Juno. Remember, she's Herc's granddaughter. And she says, listen, you know, for a pound of flesh and the blood of a god, so that you could live, you owe me. And what I want is to become your new herald. So she does. She becomes the new female Silver Surfer. And she pledges to keep the big G away from civilized worlds, much like Norrin Rad did for a time, where he was when he first became the Surfer. That was his intention as well.
But she seems to have a little bit of an agenda about that, because she says, I'll see to it that you never destroy another civilized world. And then she says, as she's going off, get ready for a serious case of heartburn, Kettlehead. Like she's going to make him pay for taking her dad.
And thinking, too, of good old...
I mean, her grandfather.
Right, of good old granddad there. Zeus's... mission for Hercules was to be the last survivor and to, birth the next gods. And between Arimathaeus and, the other surviving grandchild there, who's a speedster and now a herald of Galactus, he really has he has some legacy here. Now, weeks later, though, in the final sequences of the issue, there's another being that emerges from this Galactus chaos energy rift that's left. It's a bearded figure who is named Cosmos, and they entitle him as the Bringer of Worlds. Apparently, Galactus was split into two in this event. This Cosmos creates life and beauty on barren planets. He leaves thriving planetary systems in his wake, where, Galactus is the opposite of that. So that's kind of a neat yin and yang setup.
And don't you think that this Cosmos is in some way Hercules kind of reconstituted?
Oh, absolutely. That's why he's got the beard.
He has a beard, right? He has the beard. And on his head... It looks. He has this white stripe.
It's an H.
But the white stripe is bisected, and it's an H.
Yeah, clearly. Just like Galactus used to have the big G on his belt, right? When Kirby drew.
Yeah. Because in all the galaxy and universe, G is the accepted glyph.
Yep.
For Galactus.
The big G. Now, also as a little final moment, which. Again, goes to the wonderful tapestry that Leighton has set up here and some nice closure, is that it's also said that the Rigelians, those colonizing aliens, they get to spend the rest of their species' days gleefully following Cosmos and planting their flag on all the planets he creates in his wake. So that's a cool little ending for everybody, I think.
And one more ending.
Yeah.
One more major ending.
So we did it. And I should also say that this segment has been brought to you by Boomerang Puffs.
Oh, wait.
Right? The breakfast cereal that you can eat twice.
No.
throughout the...
No,
the...
no. What? There's one more ending. There's one more ending.
What?
There's one more ending.
You don't like the boomerang puffs?
Skip. Well...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I got nothing. I don't like the boomerang puffs. No.
But just
don't
ask
forget Ralph... Skippy's ending.
All right, go
I don't
ahead.
Have any of it. Skippy's ending.
Yeah.
How did Skippy go out? Do you recall?
I do. Skippy comes to Arimathaeus, and Arimathaeus is leading his broken, dying body up onto a podium. He says, I've already taken the substance, and I've chosen my form, and I'm going to spend the rest of my eternity. Poof. And what does he turn into?
Turns into a statue of Hercules.
Yeah, his old pal.
As he remembers it. I mean, you know, that's a little deep there, right?
Yeah. I thought that was way...
But then Leighton, right? But then Leighton, of course, is Leighton, Bob Leighton, and he has a bird, lands on the statue, and leaves a little gift on the head. Just a little poop to say, don't cry, I still like my good tones. I still like the comedy virtue of my stories. So he leaves it with Skippy's a statue, and Hercules gets a little splat on the upper temple there.
And the recorder ended up with a little upgrade too. We see the Rigellians that we've always seen as these little short guys now as these big, tall, lanky fellas. And the recorder gets an upgrade too, and appears as that at the end. And one other thing I should mention about the recorder in this series that I thought was not done more than once, but once was all it took for me to get it. One of the times where Herc is showing his brain-damaged personality, the recorder is standing in the corner of the room, facing the corner. And one of the grandkids mentions that, like, well, what's up with the recorder? And Hercules just says with kind of a frown on his face that, like, I don't know, it's sometimes he just chooses to, you know, stand that way and be more comfortable. And I'm thinking he doesn't want to record his pal Hercules looking like a buffoon.
Oh, my gosh!
Right?
Stop it! I'm going to cry!
Isn't that cool?
Oh, man, that's awesome. I never even thought of that.
The recorder, whose whole being is to record everything around him, decides to face the other way and not see what's going on when Herc is like that. Really cool.
Oh, my God.
Good
pals. That's awesome. Yeah.
It's a buddy book. It's a buddy book for sure.
You got to ask Leighton if that's what he was thinking of. I do really want to know what his experience was with this kind of declining health thing. He
it's
really does
so
seem
well.
Like he had some kind of personal contact with this experience.
It really is. It's done very well, and like I said, if going through mythological adventures, myths and stories, is the way that Joseph Campbell once said their function in the world was to help you understand facets of life and get you through various transitions in life and various events in life by showing you a way and giving you different ways to think about them, then this story certainly fits the bill for someone in a situation with someone who's, again, terminally ill or no longer themselves. But again, this series isn't a downer at all. There's still a lot of fun stuff going on. I think it's balanced really well and fun comics, and it makes me wish Leighton was going to do more, but at the same time, this was such an awesome epilogue to everything.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
And thanks for being with me on that. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining me and doing this. We made it.
Thank you for letting me have a nice, nice romp back into the good old days and up into the current days.
I know. When I wanted to go back and read this stuff, I pulled out my old issues, and I said, you know what? I'm going to get the hardcover and reread this stuff in the nice on the nice paper and everything, and I'm glad I did the upgrade. Looking way back at those old comics from '82, man, those pages are so ink-stained and, you know, just from the way the printing process was in the paper at that time, that it was. I'm so happy to have this stuff on my bookshelf because it is a great self-contained set of adventures. And if you never have checked them out or have only checked out bits and pieces of it, I really suggest doing so, because we really didn't spoil a lot of the tender moments that lie in between the big events that drive the plot. All right, Alan, I look forward to seeing you in, like, less than a month or around a month or so at your birthday convention celebration. New York City Comic Con is coming up.
Can't wait. My city.
Yeah, can't wait to see you. Get to see my buds again. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Come down, party, party all the time.
I'm looking forward to walking up and down the rows of Artist Alley with you again, as we did last year.
Got it. It's a date.
All right, gang. So the recorder realizes that all this time the mute button was on his microphone. Make mine Marvel. Later.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. What I want to talk about a little bit is, I'm going to put this. Right now, most of the focus of a lot of comic book fandom is on DC Comics, because DC has rebooted their titles once again. You know, you can't really say they rebooted the universe, because if they did, then it's a soft boot. You know, a lot of times people will say that DC has rebooted their universe, and they never really have. Marvel never really has rebooted their universe either. They've come close a couple of times where they have reset a bunch of characters. They've reset a bunch of titles, but there's never barely been a really big reboot. The closest thing you could say that there's been a reboot in either universe is when DC does their fifth week events, when they do like Tangent or I would say Amalgam, but not really, because that actually takes both of them. But it's when they just take the very basics of what the stories should be or what the universe is, and then they run with it from there, you know. And usually, a lot of times, especially with DC's Tangent Universe, and I'm going to get off DC in a second, they just use some of the names, you know. They use, like, Atom and Joker and Secret Six and stuff like that, but they don't actually use the same characters. And what has been going on now is, like, they've reset. They haven't rebooted. If you rebooted, then you wouldn't have a Superman who is also Clark Kent, who does all the stuff that he does. It's exactly the same. And Batman wouldn't pretty much be the same character for the last 80 years. You know, if you do a real reboot, then you get things like a black Nick Fury or a black, half black, half Hispanic, Spider-Man, you know, you know, kind of. One thing that that Marvel does do when they decide to reboot something is they will keep the core of their story. And luckily, they never really call it a reboot. You know, they may tinker with, for example, the origin of Iron Man, but they have to. They update. They call theirs updating, which makes perfect sense to me, you know. And they don't just do that with their comics. They also do that with their movies, and that makes sense, you know. Let's face it, for a while there, comic book movies were really hot. You know, people think, you know, oh, there's all these comic book movies coming out now. Yeah, but they're coming out almost out of necessity. You know, they're not coming out because these are movies that people want to see, you know, or, you know, Hollywood thinks, you know what, it'd be a great idea if we made a movie about this character, you know, or even it'd be a great idea if we made a movie about a character like this. Let's see if somebody has this already and just license it from them. What happens is that a lot of people in Hollywood, they don't really pay attention. They don't pay attention to comic books, you know. As much as comic book fans would like to think that they pay attention to us and our little corner of pop culture, they don't. What they want to do, and this may have something to do with the creative and intellectual bankruptcy of Hollywood, but what they want is a project that's almost all completed. You know, I mean, if you listen to a lot of the creators, the writers and artists who do decide to go over to Hollywood, a lot of times they're told that it'd be easier to get a project off the ground if they have a completed story. You know, if they have like a trade paperback that they can show somebody, because let's face it, what is a comic book? Especially, you know, a superhero comic book, other than a bunch of storyboards. You know, I mean, if you have a project that's already completed, then they're going to say, oh, yeah, we can work with this. We don't have to worry about thinking a whole lot of thought into it. And there's a built-in audience. Now, remember, comic book industry, comic book fandom really is taking a hit from our heyday, right? When I think that they were like, what was it, Captain Marvel from by Fawcett was selling like 40 million copies a month, you know? Can you imagine selling 40 million copies of anything in this day and age? Yeah, wow. That still blows my mind when I stop and think about it. But I think that there are probably, and I have said this on Comic Book Noise, I think that there are probably about a million comic book fans. I think in the United States. Now, you know what? I'm gonna say in the English speaking nations. All right, in the nations where English is a primary language, I'm gonna say they're probably a million if we're being generous. You know, and I'm including people who buy on a regular basis, whether that regular basis is every week, every month, or bi-monthly. You know, I believe that because comic book fans are so vocal towards other comic book fans, and that we are in this bubble, it seems like that sometimes we forget that there's not really a whole lot of us out there, and they being let's just say call the mainstream media, the movie makers and the television show makers and even the reviewers from big newspapers, they don't really care. A lot of times they don't even care to check facts, you know. That's why a lot of people will get bent out of shape when Marvel will release a press. You know, they will have a press release that will, quote unquote, spoil a comic book, you know. you know, although to tell you the truth, if you have a storyline called The Death of Spider-Man, I think you kind of already know how it's going to end, you know. But no, people were bent out of shape because the death of Captain America was announced on like USA Today, or was it Johnny Storm's death was announced on USA Today? Or the idea of a black Spider-Man was announced the day before on USA Today. People would get bent out of shape not remembering that there are more than a million people who read USA Today. You know, there are more than a million people who will watch Good Morning America, or maybe I think even the Colbert Show. You know, there are more than a million people who will watch Bill O'Reilly talk about Black Spider-Man, you know. And that's just in the U.S. All right. So when we get bent out of shape, we have to remember that stuff for, you know, mainstream press releases and stuff like that, they're not meant for us. They are not. Movies really are not meant for us. They are meant for the movie going audience, of which there are a lot more. You know, it's the same thing with video games. You know, they will take liberties with TV shows, movies, and video games because they're going for a much broader audience. You know, a much broader audience that is not shrinking. Okay, so remember that next time you decide to get bent out of shape over something. So what Marvel did, after the debacle that was the Ang Lee Hulk movie, was they decided to basically strip the character down to what it was supposed to be. You know, they did the same thing with the Punisher, right? The Punisher movie was, I don't know, it seemed like it was a character study or something, when that's not what people want from the Punisher. That's not what comic book fans want from the Punisher. It's not what movie-going fans want from the Punisher, or even the Hulk. Nobody really cares about, you know, his problems with his father. No, we want to see Bruce Banner get mad, turn into the Hulk, and smash stuff. We want to see the army coming after him and shooting, you know, thousands of rounds at him, and all they do is tear his pants. We want to see a much bigger threat come, and then the Hulk is the only one who can save the day. And yet the army still doesn't trust him. That's what we want to see. We don't want to see his origin story where he has to figure out what's going on. No, nobody wants any of that crap. What we want is explosions, right? We know how the Punisher's family got killed. Okay, let's get past that point. We don't want to see him. We don't want to see the bad guys going after him and making their plans and all that kind of stuff. No, we want to see them sitting in a room saying, "We have to kill the Punisher." And then the Punisher comes, rappelling in and just starts shooting everybody. That's what we want. Okay, now probably thinking, wow, that's kind of simplistic. Do comic book fans really want something simplistic? Maybe not comic book fans, but superhero movie fans, yeah, that's what they want. That's what they expect. That's what they need, right? Every now and then you can throw them a bone and give them something with some brains to it. But for the most part, you don't really need to. Okay? Look at the movie Iron Man, right? They had an origin story to tell. They told it. The next movie should have been about Iron Man having, you know, glitches in his armor, or he's fighting other armored people. In between shots of Tony Stark living the high life. You know, we didn't really need to see anything about Mickey Rourke and his character. We didn't really need to have, they needed S.H.I.E.L.D. I take that back. They needed S.H.I.E.L.D. because that is part of a bigger picture. But there was a lot of in-jokes with Iron Man 2 that were unnecessary, you know. if you look at the X-Men movies, I don't think that, no, the X-Men and Spider-Man movies, I'm not going to talk about, because those guys, they're in their own Marvel movie universe. They're not part of the Marvel Studios universe, you know. But Marvel learned their lesson. You know, Marvel decided, okay, you know what, we're going to strip these things down. We're going to strip our characters down. We are going to put an emphasis on their basic story. You know, they could have made Captain America's movie, because I finally saw Captain America First Avenger. They could have made that a lot more complicated than they ultimately did. Ultimately. Anyway, they could have made it a lot more intricate. They could have made it a lot more confusing. But they decided not to. They tried to keep it as simple as possible, you know. And I noticed some people were sort of upset at Gabe Jones being such a big part of the Howling Commandos. But you got to remember one thing, you know, this isn't our universe. That's the Marvel universe. So we don't know how long it took the army to be integrated. Just saying. Anyway, so what they did with Thor was they said, okay, here's our basic story. Let's work with that, you know, and that's good. And as long as they keep things on a more realistic, on a much, I don't want to say realistic, but on a much more believable level, you know, then I'm good with that. The problem with what DC did, especially with their Batman franchise, is they went the opposite way. You know, they started off pretty, you know, it's kind of hard to say when you're talking about a Tim Burton movie, a couple of Tim Burton movies, but they started off a lot more realistic. And then somebody decided, you know what? More people know about Batman, the TV show. So let's give them that, you know. And then there was one sort of all right movie and one atrocious movie. The problem is, and this is something, because I don't know, I think maybe Joel Schumacher was a fan of that Batman cartoon show. Maybe he watched it after school. Maybe he forgot one thing, that it only lasted 2 years. All right, and the shows were not that great, and it only lasted 2 years, so you shouldn't really take the whole franchise in that direction. And then what happened, DC got smart, and they gave it to somebody who stripped it down, stripped the whole story down, and went back to the basics. Said, this is what Batman is about. Right now, I keep hearing that's what Marvel's going to do with Spider-Man. They're going to strip it down and do a sort of a reset. You know, I'm cool with that. Like I said, it worked with the Hulk. So maybe it'll work with Spider-Man. I don't know. Like I said, it's a whole different set of people. Hopefully they will do something like that with Daredevil, right? Instead of trying to do what Frank Miller did, maybe, just maybe, somebody should give them a copy of Mark Waid's Daredevil. So Mark Waid's Daredevil seems like it'd be a lot easier to do, and his Daredevil is a lot more fun. You know, his Daredevil, I love Frank Miller's Daredevil, don't get me wrong. It's like one of my all-time favorite comic book runs. But it's done. It's done. It's over with. It happened 30 years ago now, right? Let's do something different. And what Mark Waid is doing is he's taking the character from the brooding ninja wannabe type and made him more of the swashbuckling daredevil type, you know, the guy, because don't forget, this guy's blind and yet he's jumping off of buildings with nothing but a billy club, you know. I mean, get into that sort of mindset. Anyway, hopefully the DC people, not DC, Jesus, the movie people will think about that for Daredevil, because that would be cool. I'd like to see a Daredevil movie based on this Daredevil, one of these reckless man without fear types who will jump headfirst off of a building. Like I said, the X-Men, I don't know. I don't think it would take much to rehabilitate the X-Men, but it seems like with every new X-Men movie since the second one, they wanted to make it more and more convoluted. They wanted to make it more and more unnecessarily intricate. You know, they added entirely too many characters for that third movie. And then with the Wolverine movie, I will say, was pretty good when they were talking about his origin and him in the past. And then when they kind of like, even when they got to, was it not Team One? Team One is Wildstorm. Team X, Team Alpha, Team whatever in the hell with Deadpool and all those guys. When they got it to that part and everybody was, you know, and somebody was killing each other off, that was, you know, that was good. And they could have like stopped it after he caught the killer. But then they added more and it was like, they kind of, it seemed to me like they wanted to add all of the cool solo Wolverine storylines into one movie because they didn't know if they were going to get another one. And that was like the worst way they possibly could have done it. If you have like four different stories, right? Tell the first two, tease the rest so that people will want to say, man, you know, that Wolverine movie was good. I want to see them. I want to see another one instead of like burning out. And I haven't seen X-Men First Class, so I can't really comment on it, but it just seems like there's a lot of inconsistencies that, I don't know. Once again, they're giving movie fans what they want, not necessarily comic book fans what they want, because they know, and quite rightly so, we're going to go and see the movie anyway. You know, whether we go see it in the theater or we wait for it to come out on DVD, the million people who are comic book fans are going to see it. Anyway, well, I just meant to talk for like a few seconds, but thank you for listening to Movie Noise, Marvel Noise, and come back next week. We'll have something good for you in the feed, and hopefully David will be back soon, and then he can sit around and let's say make a lot of noise, and so he can come back and take the reins over, and you won't have to hear me for a while. And once again, I'd like to thank Steve, and all of the past and future contributors to Marvel Noise. I know David feels a great appreciation, and I only step in every now and then, but I appreciate everything that you guys do, and the listeners. I appreciate you guys listening to this and listen to all the shows in the Comic Book Noise family, if you do. And if you don't, I'm going to be nice and just say you should check them out. You know, and if you want to find me, I'm at comicbooknoise.com. If you would like to follow David on Twitter, it's twitter.com/DavidAPrice. You can follow me. It's Derek Coward, D-E-R-E-K Coward. We are also both on Facebook. I think it's facebook.com/MarvelNoise and facebook.com/ComicBookNoise. So go there. Like the page if you do, and you can get all of the updates that we do there. Anyway, thanks, and you know, come back soon. Should I end it by saying make mine Marvel Noise? Yeah, I guess I will. Make mine Marvel Noise.
We're gonna do a song that you never, heard before.
Break loose, free, oppressed. What you give is what you get now. Break loose, free, oppressed. What you give is what you get now. Check it. Slang verbs, slang words, most miraculous. These cats give me dabs to my crackle wrist. I slide with drum kicks, white slick. It's the bench kick.
track spectacular. Square roots back to Africa's crowds back bus. Ride the calculus, leave clouds of dust. A basic mathematic kid slacking it. A cruise below freeze averages. Walking like Nazareth, my average moves like Farrakhan's. Just as fast, have a tablet. Top secret poetic, photochromogenics. It's correlated, now respond to the esthetic. Stretch specimens, creative leverages. Diametric imperative to what a session is. Text next, yes, rap page fresh. The baby counts to text and hit the bang of chest. Yes, yes, yes. Break, loose, free, press. What you give is what you get now. Break, loose, free, press. What you give is what you get now. Break, loose, loose, loose. I got spades, diamonds, clubs, clovers, prize fighters, paid promoters, spit eye for cobras, hocus pocus, magic potions, potent, global squares and ovals, going post exposing supernovas, diamond penny loafers, collar cobras, speaking spoken words of orbits, universes towards us, men that prosper, brings what wisdom offers, time stops over boxing, cause the poppers locking, human peanut, Alvin Coladas, rocking yourself some samples, but never play soccer, forget Rufus, we need only soccer, lords of the underground, bumping chief, rocka aga, telling freestyle topics, no crowd rocking, causing niggas heads to bobbing, cause we're so cosmic, mic cocking, we're cutting tips. Stockings, glasses, spawning me, turning Tina back to Arjun. The pop, she's a virgin. I fight through distortion. Free men like boy, and the pen still swerving. Keep the drum dirty. Know the church and only travel for a moment. Keep it crusty, dad, woman. Tower pizza leaning. Tip the Sphinx of Egypt. Mics and palms, major league, stabs, Vegas, Viva, 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 Viva. Come. Break, loose, free, press. What you get is what you get now. Break, loose, free, press. What you get is what you get now. Break, loose, loose, loose.